flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on 92.9 FM or 680 AM. However, as we announced earlier this week, and I want to keep reminding you, if you listen on the Odyssey Sports app and you listen for an hour, every hour that you listen to can be one step closer to a all-expenses-paid trip to Las Vegas. Odyssey Sports is giving listeners a chance to win an epic flyaway to Vegas with 3 friends and $20,000 spending cash for the first 2 rounds of the college basketball tournament. All you have to do is, again, download the Odyssey app, log in, and listen to 92.9. And if you listen for a minimum of 1 hour each day, you will get 1 entry. So it's 1 entry per hour that you listen. So again, all you have to do is download the Odyssey app for your chance to go to Vegas for the opening weekend of the college basketball tournament. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he's with us. My company is, he is each and every Thursday on the program. Writes about college football, college basketball at CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. That's on me. At David W. Cobb. Good day, sir.
Hey,
I forgot to mute myself on my computer, so therefore you hear the echo. That's on me. Hand up.
That's all right. You sound great. You're echoing through my ears.
Yes.
But it's all good, man. I'm doing well. I got out to the driving range yesterday for the first time in this calendar year. I know that's not a problem for you because you're a birdies guy. You can go anytime you want. But man, out in my direction, the ability to get outside and hit a few balls, ooh, it was therapeutic.
We also are in that peak. Like, we're dealing with, I think, what normal people deal with in winter, where, like, yesterday, so my wife's been out of town, but she started looking at the forecast this weekend, and it was, like, in the 60s, and yesterday here kind of, like, warmed up to where you could at least consider going outside, and you can tell, like, everyone's like, oh, it's going to be nice this weekend, let's go do something. Like, I feel like, because we've just been it's been so cold this winter, like, everybody's just like, I do not want to go outside.
Has this been the worst Tennessee winter of our lifetime? I just have a short memory, I guess, and I kind of hate winter. I'm sure there have been worse winters.
Literally, dude, I went to college in California because I was like, you see what the average temperature is there every day? Yeah, I'm going there.
I mean, if I didn't love basketball, I would have serious seasonal depression. So that first, like, ray of sunshine where you can go out, bust out the clubs, hit a few balls, that just, like, it raises my spirit. So I'm doing well.
I will say, though, maybe this makes me a bad person. It's Pebble Beach week for the PGA Tour, but it's like super overcast at Pebble right now. And like that does like make me give a fist pump. It's like, yeah, all you rich people out in Pebble Beach, like, yeah, enjoy that weather. Well, that looks miserable.
It was so windy at Torrey Pines last week. They actually had to suspend play due to the wind. That was interesting. But I'm with you. I mean, coming off of the Hawaii swing, yeah. I just watched that with such envy, you know?
Oh, God. There's nothing worse than that first look at Kapalua. And yeah. You're just like, I would do anything to be there. And like then you go and you look, you're like, oh, maybe we can make that a special trip. And you realize, like, no, there's nowhere on this island you can stay.
Well, I thought it was funny. The Champions Tour was playing out in Hawaii or somewhere out there. And
it looked Hawaii. If it wasn't Hawaii, it looked like Hawaii.
Yeah. Someplace that I'll never be able to afford to
Correct.
Go. And the broadcast crew just happened to run into Rob Lowe at the hotel.
Just, yeah. It was his vacation spot.
Exactly. And so they brought him on. And he was like, oh, I love golf. I'd be happy to come on and talk with you guys, do an interview on the air. And
it's
so they
literally
just,
my favorite
ran
thing.
Into him in the, they ran into him in the sauna, and they were like, oh, yeah, Rob Lowe vacation's here. So, but yeah, no, it's college basketball ramps up so intensely for me at this point in the year to where, like, I've got to have an outlet somehow, and then golf becomes that outlet. So this is actually one of my favorite times of year because the light's at the end of the tunnel for winter, and college basketball starts to get interesting, and then the NBA race heats up. So I know, like, people mourn the end of football season, and I do too, so it's to a certain extent. But, like, if you're a hoops junkie, this is when it starts to get fun.
No, I agree. I think there's also, like, a natural rhythm. I've noticed that, like, usually after divisional weekend, like, I'm casually watching college basketball throughout the year, but, like, I'll watch it way more seriously after divisional weekend. And then this weekend, like, I feel like every night I've had at least, like, one game with sound. Like, I can't remember the last time I had a college basketball game with sound on. And this week, this entire week, like, the Tennessee-Kentucky game, I had sound. I had to make sure I had my puppies live up in Hartford last night. They got some sound for a while. Bama-Mississippi State was a fun game last night. Like, I feel like there's, like, a natural rhythm of, like, this is the week where you start to pay attention. Like, it becomes more real rather than just like background noise. You're like, you're actually watching.
Yeah. It's that point in the calendar where our emphasis kind of increases, right? It's like every game starts to have higher stakes. Certainly the case for Memphis going down to Tulane tonight. Not that you like, you know, I get where people come from when they're like, oh, this league is boring. But at the same time, like Tulane and UAB are legitimate sort of geographical and like historical foes of significance. So like I'm excited for Memphis at Tulane tonight. That's one that their fan base cares a lot about. So
got a three-game losing streak in New Orleans.
Right, exactly. Tulane's had Memphis's number and Ron Hunter's had Memphis's number.
I think it was a four-game losing streak. It may have been a five-game losing streak in New Orleans. And they've got a three-game losing streak. So Jeff was asking me whether or not I thought that came into play, and I was doing the math. How many people with the Tigers program have actually been a part of it? And I think it's just Nick Jourdain and Penny. Because even the coaching staff's new. Remember, right. we got new coaching staff in September.
No, they did. And that's the reason why this is so crazy. The fact that Memphis is sitting here in such great position in late January. I mean, if you had asked me in mid-October or September, whenever we were talking about the coaching staff turnover, the anonymous letter, all the things that were going wrong and pointing towards the end being near under a new athletic director, it just felt like this wasn't even possible. But it was the only way out, was for Memphis to put together the type of year that they're putting together. Got to keep stacking them, though. And to me, beating Tulane would be like a great data point to back up that UAB win with another win over a team that's been a thorn in your side. I don't know. I almost feel like they would be, I mean, the lock of all locks after tonight in my mind, to not just make the tournament, obviously, but to like feel like they've accomplished something, you know, that a lot of people wouldn't have thought was possible just even 4 weeks before the season started.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things there. Number one, I totally agree with you because I think we said it in real time. Like the only way out of that mess was like, all right, well, you got to go win. It's pretty simple now. And they've done that so far. I also think another part of that is I think even the most optimistic person could not have imagined PJ Haggerty being this good.
Ugh. Insane.
Like, he's been more than just, like, you know, even the staff that recruited him, like, I have to think, like, he has delivered even more so than they could have imagined. I know you wrote about him today, but, like, I think that is a huge part of it. You know, I personally think having a pecking order and not having to kind of just shuffle in bodies left and right, like, I do know there is a little bit of a trade-off. You've talked about it, and I don't disagree with it. It's just one of those trade-offs that I'm fine dealing with, but, you know, maybe at times, like, they get worn down a little bit, but I still think I'd rather have it like this. But the other thing that's interesting that you mentioned, because it's a data point, I think the problem is it's not a data point metrically. It might be an emotional data point, though,
yes,
for the fans.
That's exactly it.
Because, like, in the end, doing what they did to UAB, it didn't really, like, change. It didn't change the outlook for Memphis in terms of a resume. Like, they're, I think they maybe moved up one spot in the net, and that was with a blowout win, like a big-time win. The problem that I keep seeing, and I'm curious to know what you think on this, have you taken a look at the conference rankings at KenPom?
I know where you're going with this.
Number one, the SEC, okay? Even though Archie Miller said since January, they're 54-54 against each other. All time, amazing. Cell phone. Hated that for Arch. Two's the Big Ten. Three's the Big 12. Four, the Big East. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone. Five, the ACC. Six, the Mountain West. Seven, the WCC. Eight, the A-10. Nine, Conference USA.
Oh, no.
Ten, the American. Again,
oh, no.
It doesn't mean anything other than, like, that's just what the numbers say. But right now, KenPom is ranking Conference USA ahead of the AAC.
Yeah, so you got, if you look at the net, you got Memphis at 40, North Texas hanging in there at 46 in the net. But then you got to go all the way down to 116 to find FAU, your third team in the net. So, okay, it's a bad league. But
and by the way,
lift.
over, just so everyone thinks I'm not cherry picking, it's worse in the net conference ratings. The SEC's 1, Big Ten 2, Big 12 3, Big East 4, ACC 5, Mountain West 6, A-10 7. CUSA's 8 in the net. They're ahead of the WCC. The Missouri Valley is ahead of them at 10, and then the AAC comes in just slightly above the Big West.
Oh, gosh, the Big West. Okay.
So this is kind of the bigger issue that I'm seeing. Where Tiger fans, I think, have a point, when they just kind of look sloppy in these conference games, it's the fact that you're not, how many, I guess that's the question. How many conference losses do you think they can take and still be a top five seed? And I know that's not like an easy, fair question. Like, that's not a math equation, because a lot of that depends on what else happens everywhere else. But that's kind of what's been unclear to me, because when you start looking at the net ratings, depending on which games you lose, like, there's a case to be made almost every single loss could knock them down a seed.
That's exactly where I've been with Memphis since conference play began, is that every loss costs you a seed. That's not going to be hard and fast, but just on average, that's what you should expect in this conference, because every loss is most likely a quad three or quad four. I mean, because you don't go to North Texas. If you went to North Texas, that would actually, based on the net right now, be a quad one, believe it or not. But you don't get that game, so that's not an option for you. So Palm has Memphis as a five right now, and I would say, okay, they could maybe take one loss and still find their way to be in a five. But by and large, I mean, I think you're right. I think every loss costs you a seed. So you lose five games in this league, and you finish 12-6 in the conference. And one, you're lucky to still be in the tournament at all when you go 12-6 in the AAC. But Memphis did enough in the non-conference to where it would be. But what I think I see out of that UAB game, and what tonight can further confirm, is that, you know, maybe we don't have to really worry about that so much. You know, could Memphis lose three conference games and finish 15-3? Sure, 14-4. I don't know that I'm worried about 13-5 or 12-6 right now. I think I feel pretty good about this team ending up with a 5-7 type of seed, which, you know, any of those things would be tremendous outcomes when you looked at this thing at the outset.
Yeah, and I think like part of the Tiger fan base anxiety right now is, you know, it's really hard to go undefeated. Like even Gonzaga in some of those years, like they're losing two games in the WCC. The problem is you are officially like done with, there's no such thing as a good win left. Like there's, you know what I mean? Like it does feel like now the only place that they can go is down in terms of seeding. Now, it's also possible that enough teams take, like even though the SEC and the Big Ten, they don't really get punished for losing to each other, there is still a reality of somebody's got to take the L's. And so teams that could be ahead of you could just naturally fall behind, even if they don't maybe fall behind you in the net, they fall behind you on the win-loss, you know, the win-loss resume. And so, like, that's kind of the thing I've struggled with, because it's like, if they go 15-3, which is, I would think, almost likely to win the league, I guess with a certain question on North Texas, but you do have a head-to-head with North Texas, and so, like, they do have to pass you. So if you finish tied, you're still gonna win the league. But then you start to, like, realize, like, okay, well, if they take two more losses, like, does that just mean, like, their ceiling's a 7? Like, because there's nothing they can do the rest of the way that, like, bumps them up.
Correct. They would have to run the table, doing so by winning games by 15 to 20 points regularly, then win the conference tournament in dominant fashion. I mean, that's the only way they can move up. And that's the frustrating part. That's why conference play is not enjoyable for Memphis like it should be. Because this should be a celebration, an enjoyment of the quality roster that you've put together, the fulfillment of the great promise that you showed in November and December. But instead, it just feels like the only thing that can happen is for something to go wrong.
Right.
There are no real victories, because even when you win, you're only accomplishing what you are supposed to accomplish. There's not a better team than you out there to go and beat. And that's what makes college sports fun, is when you have somebody out there, when you're an 8.5-point underdog as Kentucky, you're down two starters, you go on the road and you beat Tennessee. That's fun for that fan base, right? It's not fun for the Tennessee fan base, but it's super fun for the Kentucky fan base.
Man, when they had that Go Big Blue. When they had the Go Big Blue chant coming, that was tough.
It happens every time. Yeah. It happens every time. Those fans take over gyms in ways that it just blows your mind. So that's the downside of this league for Memphis. It's not fun. It's not fun, and I will never argue otherwise. But I think it's healthy to look at Tulane tonight and think like, okay, yeah, we're going to be a fairly significant favorite. We should win this game. But like, sure, for the fan base, there should be a little something extra. You know, you should be excited to go down there and see if you can't, you know, beat a team that's been a thorn in your side. And the chirping back and forth with Yaxel Lindeborg and Dane Danger makes the UAB rematch, you know, eventually more interesting.
Sure.
So, you know, I like that stuff. I think that stuff is... Whatever motivation Memphis can find, like, that's sometimes the best teams are able to motivate themselves off the smallest things. And so These guys on this roster don't have the experience of going down to Tulane and losing there, but Penny does. Like if there's a way he can use that to motivate
Nick Jourdain
team,
does, because Nick Jourdain's lost once.
Right. Like, you got to be creative about motivating your team. And like, if Yaxel Lindeborg chirping back at Dane Danger, if you can use that as motivation for the rematch, like, by all means, do it. Like, you got to be able to create your own energy during this ridiculously boring, you know, and lackluster conference slate.
All right. And then, of course, the other game we've got tonight. So the Grizzlies will host the Rockets tonight, 8:30 tip off. So we have the dreaded two game night, but they're only 30 minutes apart. So, you know, you're going to have to make your TV1, TV2 decision. What I think is interesting about tonight is normally there's not really a case for an NBA regular season game being bigger than any college regular season game, just because of scarcity. There's fewer college basketball games, and every loss you would take is, you know, as we just pointed out, has some meaning. I think there's a legitimate case tonight. Like, it's the answer tonight is the bigger game is I think not only for the teams, but like I think it's Grizzlies and Rockets for the reasons that we've talked about. Like Grizzlies Rockets is becoming a thing. You know, the Dylan angle. And then on top of that, I think in the back of everyone's mind, there is this wondering of, okay, how good is this team? Like, is this team just the team that beats bad teams, but when they play good teams, they lose? Like, I think it's kind of important. Like, when we talk about, like, an emotional data point, like, I think the fan base kind of needs to see the Grizzlies come out and play well tonight.
It's a massive game. It's on TNT. It's a home game against a Rockets team that's playing as good as anybody in the NBA right now. They just beat the Celtics. They beat the Cavaliers twice within the last, you know, week or so. They're playing at an elite level. They're as young or younger than you are, right? Because for so long it's been, the Grizzlies have the best young core in the NBA. And it's like, well, it's still a really good core, but it's not the youngest in the league by any stretch anymore. So you have this emergent Rockets team that has Dylan Brooks and Steven Adams and has given you problems this year on TNT in your building. Like, yeah, it's massive. Like, super, super fun game tonight for the Grizzlies.
Okay, and so then also before, we will find out whether or not Jaren Jackson Jr. will be selected as an all-star reserve. I'm not going to say, like, it's a lock. It seems to me that it's likely at this point. And what I kind of find interesting about it is, should we be rooting for it? Because on the one hand, yeah, you want your guy to be an all-star. I've never cared about individual accolades, ever. I got my eyes on the prize. All I care about is the team. Is it better if Jaren gets snubbed and then everybody takes it personally tonight?
Oh, maybe, but he deserves it. He needs to be an all-star. He is an all-star caliber player.
So
he should be honored.
Here's all I really care about.
Honored for his play.
Here's all I really care about. I would prefer him to get All-NBA. Because if he gets one of the All-NBA teams, the Grizzlies can actually offer an extension this summer, take care of that, an extension that he would accept and get that taken care of and be done. So that's all I care about. And Harrington, I think, pointed out, I believe the year that Mark was one of the years where Mark was All-NBA, he didn't make the All-Star game. So there's not like a direct correlation of to be All-NBA, you must be an All-Star. You would think that it should be, because if you're picking All-Stars and there's, whatever, 24 of them, right? And there's only 15 All-NBA guys. Feels like they should all probably come from the same pool, but that's just not the way it works because it's kind of a popularity contest. On the one hand, like, I'm cool with it because I think so highly of what Jaren's done this year. I'd like for him to be acknowledged by it, but I just don't care one way or the other. The All-Star game means so little to me that I just do not care. Now, if we find out that he has, like, major financial considerations, well then sure. Like I'd rather him get it than not. But I'm just kind of thinking of, I think with Jaren, maybe the idea of the snubbing motivating every, I don't know if that would be like, I think if they snub Ja, that could be like motivating. Because I think Ja would like take that more personally. I don't know if Jaren is the guy that is just gonna like use that as fuel.
But tonight you shouldn't need fuel. The fuel should be the Rockets.
I do agree with you on that.
On TNT. Now, if you want to take an all-star snub of Jaren and use it to motivate you as a team moving forward, great. Like we're talking about with the Tigers. Like, whatever you can find to like give yourself an edge to make you want to grind through an 82-game slate like the Grizzlies are tasked with doing right now, by all means, like, take it and run with it. But tonight, come on. You don't need motivation. It's the Rockets coming into your building. TNT. Nah, come on. Like they shouldn't need anything extra tonight.
Jeff asked me this, so I'll ask you. Is there any result tonight that would motivate you to say, to make some type of roster move based on one game?
I think so. I think we're at the point now with the trade deadline approaching where it's appropriate to overreact to significant games, or maybe it's not an overreaction because at this point you have a certain body of work and a lot of data. And if you go out there and lose by 40 tonight and you get out physical and out muscled,
it's kind of the continuing
three
of a
rotation
shrink.
Quality players on the bench with DMPs, yeah. Then like, sure, you know, because the Grizzlies have an excess of, you know, did you see the ESPN trade deadline explainer piece where they were sort of looking at the deadline and they were more or less suggesting that Jimmy Butler could still happen?
So we've talked about it a decent amount here. I am now at the point where, as more time goes on, there are fewer and fewer destinations for Jimmy Butler. And it's one of those things where the people that keep mentioning it are the same people that, like, I pay attention to. And so I'm now at the point where it's like, I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm not ignoring or dismissing it.
How badly does Jimmy Butler want out? Because there's only a handful of teams that could make this work. The Grizzlies are one of them, and I'm less opposed to it now maybe than I was before. One, because I think Jimmy's going to be more desperate and more willing to go somewhere that maybe wasn't initially on his A-list. And two, the price is going down. I mean, the trade deadline's coming up. You know, the Heat don't want to get stuck with him on as dead weight on their roster. And if he wants to play basketball, it's not going to be in Miami. So something's got to get done here. If you could haggle this price down or circumstances, you know, make it to where you can get a closeout type of bargain on him, then okay, like maybe I'm interested.
Yeah, I mean, like any deal, it's to your point, what's the cost? I've kind of decided if you could get the agreement of, hey, I'm not opting into the player option and we truly just accept this as a rental, that's kind of an ideal scenario for me. But DeMichael kind of talked me into, there's a way, even if he did opt in for next year, there's a way where financially they could probably make it work.
See, so the problem, right, as I understand it, would be that if they traded for Jimmy Butler and then he opted into his massive player option,
I think it's 52.
They wouldn't be able to then re-sign Jaren Jackson Jr. until after next season, at which point he would be an unrestricted free agent.
Now, part of that depends on, that is true if Jaren doesn't win, if Jaren doesn't become All-NBA, any of the all-three NBAs, or wins Defensive Player of the Year, which honestly, it seems we're now weirdly at the point where, even though he's already won Defensive Player of the Year, it feels like the more likely scenario is winning third team All-NBA is more likely than Defensive Player of the Year. But if that scenario occurs, then the Grizzlies can offer the max deal that's part of the salary cap. They could offer that. It still wouldn't, he would still be playing next year on the last year of his current deal, but they could at least have the contract done. The extension's over. But if they doesn't do that, then yes, that is the case in that it's not that they couldn't work something out, but it's that the only extension the Grizzlies can offer is a 10% raise off of what his last year is. And because right. His deal was de-escalating, there's just no way Jaren would, like, that's not a contract offer that Jaren would accept.
Yeah, if bringing in Jimmy Butler risks Jaren Jackson Jr. entering unrestricted free agency, then I want no part of it.
And I think in the end, like the Grizzlies are, even if he does go to unrestricted free agency, I think that's kind of the same equation no matter what. Like, I think Jaren is going to unrestricted free agency simply based on whether or not he makes third team All-NBA or second, whatever, an All-NBA team. Because otherwise, there's no reason for him to accept any deal that the Grizzlies can actually offer early.
Well, right. Well, he should be an All-Star. And I am anxious to figure out if he is awarded that honor tonight, because you look at him, how important he's been to this team and how just effective he is. I mean, he's one of the top 20 offensive players in the NBA and a top five defender. I mean, there's very few players who are that good, elite, even on both ends of the floor. And he's taken strides. He continues to improve. He's matured. He's grown in the way he approaches the game. Where would the Grizzlies be without him?
I know this, not third in the West. Lock. That's definitely not. That's for damn sure. All right, Grizzlies and Rockets tonight. We're going to talk about it with Eric Hasseltine next. But before we do that, I want to remind you that Zen Sports has already picked a December big game sweepstakes winner. And now they're rolling out for just two more days the VIP Players Club sweepstakes for January. One grand prize winner will win a $10,000 bonus bet on the NFL big game and $10,000 cash or an alternative prize of $15,000 cash. You have the ability to earn entries on every bet you place in January and every dollar you wager. Plus, you can earn 10 times the entries on all parlay bets. It doesn't get much better than this. And if you don't win the grand prize, don't worry. You'll also have a shot to win one of five small prizes, which grant you either a $1,000 bonus bet on the NFL big game or $250 cash. Also, for new customers who sign up using code JEFFTN, J-E-F-F-T-N, you will receive 500 bonus entries in addition to the entries earned from the value of the qualifying bet. Head on over to zensports.com/sweepstakes for a full list of rules, and you can earn a $100 no-danger first wager on your first bet. Zen Sports, betting just got better. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. You must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Terms and conditions do apply. Eric Hasson next, right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That music means we welcome the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer to the program. Grizzlies and Rockets tonight. Late start because it's a TNT game. Pre-game at 8 p.m. right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Eric with the call at 8:30. Eric, this kind of feels like a pretty big game considering it's just a regular season game in January.
Yeah, I think it is. I think especially after what happened in New York. I'm trying to figure out what the heck to do with myself for the next, you know, extra 90 minutes, but we'll figure something out, productive, hopefully. But yeah, it is a big game. There's three reasons. One, then the most pressing is that the Rockets are a game and a half ahead of you in the standings, and they own the tiebreaker. So you're going to have to get ahead of them if you want home court advantage potentially in a second round matchup, or, you know, if you can hang on to that two seed. Who knows? There's still so much basketball right left to be played. But these things do matter. And so the Rockets are a game and a half ahead of you. They played one fewer games. You win this game tonight, they're a half game ahead of you. They're just a game ahead of you in the loss column. And you got to, you know, they'll lose another game. So it's what they do in the rest of their games and what you do in yours. The other reason is that you're coming off arguably your worst performance of the year. It just was bad. It happens. You have bad nights. It's unfortunate it happened on a big stage, which being New York and the Knicks playing well and everybody starting to really focus on that group. I think they're starting five matches up with just about anybody. Their question is their depth, and their bench was fantastic. And, you know, talking to Mike Breen after the game, not to name drop, but he was like, hey, that's one of the best games the Knicks have played all year. And I said, coupled with the worst that the Grizzlies played, that's not a good mixture. But a lot of people saw it. And, you know, the questions immediately become, well, can they do this? Can they do that? Look at their record now. You know, the record on the league side when they go against teams above 500 fluctuates because the teams that are around 500 one day are above, one day are below, and then it changes the win-loss record. But they're about 500 against teams with winning records. And, you know, with a winning record as of today. And that's not awful. Like, I hear people just going, oh, they're just so bad against good teams. I'm like, they're not bad. Good teams are supposed to win games. Like, one good team that plays another good team, one good team's going to lose. It's just a fact. And no games end in ties. And, you know, they got caught by Houston in the early part of the season in a bad second half. I thought they did not close out a game. The game in Houston, the second one, they could have easily won that game and just made just a couple mental mistakes. And then the game at home, they didn't close out the game. And Houston keeps coming. And the teams that can be really tough for them are the teams that have a good starting five, that come physical, that come aggressive, and get up on you. So after that worst performance, that makes this game bigger because now it's on a nationally televised stage and you're coming off your worst performance yet. And the other factor is that, you know, you've got to start to figure out how to win games against teams that have the length and athleticism of teams like New York, of teams like Oklahoma City, of teams like the Rockets. Look, you beat the Celtics, and the key to the Celtics is pretty simple. If you can defend the three or make it tougher on them from three, you got a really good chance to win on that night. The problem is they make it really hard to defend that, and we saw that last night against Chicago when Kristaps Porzingis is stepping out to 28 feet and just draining threes. But you look at Cleveland, and they've had their issues. And this Rockets team is starting to just roll confidence. So the third reason is you got to knock them down a peg, because right now these guys are coming in chest bowed out going, hey, we've just beaten Cleveland twice. The Celtics on their home floor on a last second shot by a second year kid who really is more, closer to a first year player because he didn't play a ton last year. And then on the second night of a back to back, went to Atlanta for a makeup game and thumped them pretty solidly. So you got to take advantage of the opportunity of a team that's playing their third game in four nights. You've had time to rest. And quite honestly, getting that success against a team that's in the upper echelon is critical, because you're seeing all the talk about the Rockets and the Knicks and they're beating the elite teams. And you know who's not mentioned as an elite team right now? The Grizzlies. You want that moniker. You want that recognition. You got to win games like this, especially on your home floor. So, look, this is why you play. And this is why you go out and, lace them up and you go out for games like this. You go out to play every game, but this one has a little more meaning and it's going to be intense and people are excited for it. So hopefully they come in locked in and, you get away from what the Knicks made them do and what the Rockets have done multiple times, which is turn them into a one-on-one team with lower assist numbers than usual and a high, one-on-one attack usage rate higher than they usually do. So, being a radio host, that fans are creatures of the moment. They just are. Like, if you beat a team by 40, you're the greatest team ever. If you lose a game like you did in New York, everything's all out of whack, and you might have to hit the reset button. And it could change tomorrow. And I think to get people back on board, knowing that this team, when they're playing their game and implementing their style, is really good, you got to win a game like this.
So, Eric, the All-Star reserves will be announced at 5:30. One, mm-hmm. to what extent would Jaren being named an All-Star, might that help the perception of whether or not the Grizzlies are an elite team? If they do have an All-Star, and then, also kind of like, how are you feeling about his chances going into that announcement?
Well, it's really going to come down to the wild cards, I think, because the starters are what, LeBron, KD, and Jokic? So you're almost assuredly going to get Anthony Davis into that group. You basically only have seven more players that can go, what is it, three front court, two back court, and two wild cards. And so I don't know if the stuff going on with De'Aaron Fox hurts his chances, with the voting from the coaches. If I'm not mistaken, it's voted on by the coaches and they cannot vote for their own player, and head coaches, that is. And then, you've got, you've got Alperen Şengün, you've got Domantas Sabonis, you've got AD, as we said. They list Jalen Williams as a front court player. I think he's more of a guard, but that could be the wild card, and he's certainly having a great year, and they're the number one team in the West right now. So I don't know, Cobb, if it does cement anything as being an elite team. I think it cements Jaren as taking big steps forward in his career. He's been an All-Star. Last year he had to shoulder the load with a group of guys that were all in street clothes because of injuries and, at times other reasons. And he handled it, I thought, beautifully. And the maturity level has risen. And for people that haven't seen a lot of this team, because the expectations nationally weren't super high, especially when they made the television schedules, this team hasn't been on national TV a ton. So that's another reason why tonight's big, is you don't get a lot of opportunities at this. And let's be honest about it, over the years, the Grizzlies have not always put their best foot forward in nationally televised games. They did on Martin Luther King Day. That was a good win over a Minnesota team that's getting, getting things in order for them. But go back to Super Bowl Sunday a couple of years ago when they played in Boston. And they played well for three quarters, and then it just went the way of Boston, and it was a missed opportunity to show that you were up there. And they keep knocking on that door. And the problem with that becomes, as you guys know, every time you keep knocking on a door and you can't get through it, people start losing faith that you can get through it. So I don't know that Jaren making the All-Star game changes that moniker about the team, but it certainly shows, hey, they got an all-star on that group and a guy who's been a multiple-time all-star, but maybe we got to pay a little more attention. So it might help a little, but just for the attention factor.
Well, Jeffrey wants them to get snubbed tonight so that the Grizzlies will come out with a chip on their shoulder.
I think it'd be better if Ja got snubbed than Jaren, but I'll say this. I'm not saying I'm rooting for it. I'm not going to be mad.
Well, that's I'm hearing every pundit when you talk about this guy and that guy, this writer, that writer, this host, that host. There was, Sam Mitchell, a former NBA Coach of the Year, or Antonio Daniels, I think it might have been, too.
And Tiger's assistant.
Yeah, Sam Mitchell was the Tiger's assistant for a minute. But yeah. I want to say both of them had Jaren, and I know Daniels had Ja on his list of guards. And I was like, whoa. Like, I didn't see that moniker coming. Not because I don't think Ja's...
No, it's just from the amount of games he's played.
He hasn't played a bunch of games. Yeah. His numbers are down comparatively to in years past. He's had the highlight reel plays, but you go look and you're like, all right, 20 point, a shade over 20 points a game. The assist numbers are up. He's getting more steals, but his 3-point percentage is still around 30.5. And, does that warrant that when you're talking about guys like De'Aaron Fox and, Devin Booker and these other guys? And I mean, look, inevitably, a couple of guys are going to get snubbed. I'm going to be honest about it. I'm sick of the chip on the shoulder stuff because if that's what you need to get fired up at this point, if you're the Grizzlies, then you're missing the point of what the whole goal is. And they're good. People know they're good. They're not snubbed among the people in the league that play against them. That this is a team that is a benchmark game for a lot of young teams, for teams like San Antonio, for teams like Houston before now when they've gone on this run. Early in the season for Houston, this was a big, hey, these are the guys that we want to be ahead of. These are the guys that are going to be our biggest challenge. These guys in Dallas, nobody knew what would happen with New Orleans with the injuries. But this is a game we need to win to prove to ourselves we belong up there, because you look at their roster when healthy and they're going to be dangerous. And so I'm going back to that, I hear that all the time. Oh, they've got a chip on their shoulder. Oh, they've got this. Okay, I get it. I get it. Everybody's, motivates themselves in different ways. I just think this team needs to start motivating themselves from the inside to be the best versions of themselves. And I've seen that many times this year. And that's when they're at their best. They don't care about who they're playing. If they play their game and play it at the highest level, teams are going to have a hard time against them.
What do you make of the turnover issues?
First off, yeah, on that, you're playing faster, so the number's not going to be 13 or 14.
Right, like there's more possessions.
Possessions. You're the highest paced team in the league. Last year, Indiana went through the same thing. The turnovers that need to end are the turnovers when you're down 6 or 8 and it becomes I'm going to go get this and bring us back. It's a mistake made in aggression, which is great. I have no problem with that in terms of you're being aggressive. It's just you got to be aggressive and at the right moments and temper that with a little wisdom and feeling for the game. So, again, you can just say this about the Knicks game. They played badly. They had a bad night. They had an off night in every facet of the game. Yet at one point towards the end of the first half, they're within 2. They surrender a 6-0 run, almost a 9-0 run. Bridges 3 when he stole the inbounds pass, went halfway in. But they were down double figures in the first quarter, cut that to 3. They just started the second quarter giving up an 8-0 run, and they started the third quarter just getting run right by. And, it was one of those nights. Your legs, you're hitting the midpoint of the season. Some nights your legs are just not going to be there. The shot's not going to be there. You look at some of the jumpers, I thought, from, afar in Madison Square Garden. We don't sit on the court. But at times it almost looked like you weren't, releasing the ball with the same level of not thinking about it to where you were wishing it there and not like guiding it per se, but like not the same stroke.
And not letting it rip.
Yeah, basically the best way to put it. And I'm trying to phrase it the best way so people understand, but it's not like they're not believing they can make the shot, but there's just that minimal hesitation. And when you see it, you're like, oh, okay, they're trying to fight through something, fighting through fatigue, fighting through questioning. Should I take this or not? When you watch them play, when they blow teams out, it's just like, forget about it. Who cares? Pull up from the logo. Nobody cares because it's probably going in the way you're playing. So, I don't make a ton about it. They're going to be at the bottom of the league in turnovers because they're going to be at the top of the league in pace. It's when the turnovers occur. And I thought they had done a much better job in recent weeks, you know, of taking better care of the basketball. And they had dropped their turnover numbers, you know, below 17. But then you have one bad game, and it was pretty much, you know, the epitome of what you didn't want to have happen against New York. I mean, look, here's the thing. Where everybody's talking about what's wrong with this team, they were 10-4 in November. They were 10-4 in December. And if they win tonight, they're 9-5 in January. That, to me, is pretty good. 29-13 in a 42-game stretch is not bad. So all these people that are like, oh, look, what's going on? October, you were figuring out the first handful of games to figure out the offense. Since that time, you know, you win tonight, you're 29-13. Even if you lose tonight, you're 28-14. You're two wins to every loss. That's pretty good for this league.
How are we feeling about the G.G. Jackson minutes? Because, you know, like, as we've discussed, it's a little bit of a different vibe than it was last season when he was playing with the 10-day guys and the exhibit whatever's and all the...
Yeah, what was it, exhibit 30s? What are we calling that? Yeah.
However many exhibits there are,
yeah,
the Grizzlies took a tour of all of them last season. But this is different, right? Because he's in there with the A-level rotation guys, and he's five games in, right? I don't expect it to be perfect, but like, kind of, what are you seeing from GG, and kind of where are his minutes going right now for the Grizzlies?
Well, I think you got to give him a little bit of time. But yeah, last year when you're talking about that, see a G League game. Hey, that guy scored 17. See if he's free for the next 10 days. We'll need him for a minute. That's kind of how that seemingly went. And I get it. That was just what
make
you
sure
had
we
to
got
do.
His number.
Yeah, do you have call his agent? Yeah. Oh, he doesn't have an agent. Even better, have him call us.
We'll get a deal.
Yeah, it's going to be a work in progress. I mean, he's so talented, and he's just got physical gifts that people salivate over if you're a coach. This dude is 6'9", borderline 6'10", still growing. He just turned 20 in December. He can get to the basket. He's shooting the ball with confidence. It's just learning how to play this fast. And so I hate to pass any judgment yet. You knew it was going to be a little bit of a struggle. The thing is that, you know, this team can go 11, 12 guys deep, and then you're going to have to make some hard decisions. When do you start tightening up the rotations? Who gets their minutes cut? Well, right now we know the first guy that got his minutes cut was John Conchar. The second guy that gets his minutes cut usually is Scottie Pippen or Jay Huff. And if those both get their minutes cut, you're probably looking at more the way Kennard's playing of Jake LaRavia in that group. And so now you're running... If Marcus Smart can get healthy, you're running the five you have, because I don't think you take Jalen Wells out of the starting rotation, and you run Kennard, and you run Clark, and you run Jackson, and you run Smart. And there's your nine. And then the 10th can be Pippen, who's earned his opportunity. Aldama's in there as well, and Aldama's been fantastic. I didn't even mention Santi. He's been the best bench player, so he's in that mix. I mean, you can just keep going on and on, which is why a lot of people are like, oh, do you make a move and you condense the roster? No, because... Turned ankles happen. Strained hamstrings happen. Fatigue happens. Like, you want to have that depth, but you also want those guys to understand, like, hey, you may not see the court tonight, and it's about professionalism. If you get guys in there that are worried about that, then you got a problem. And Gigi's not one of those guys, but he is definitely a part of what you want to build on for the future in terms of the talent he has and what he's capable of doing. I mean, quite honestly, there's a lot of guys like that, and you may have too many. That's where you give them credit for what happened last year, is finding guys that could play. We haven't even talked about Vince Williams, and he was a big part of what you did last year. Where's Vince Williams going to get minutes? Jalen Wells has been fantastic. So you can't undo those minutes for the kid that's done everything right. So, yeah, it's not a spot I envy for the coaching staff and the front office to figure out who's going where, but I think if you break it down, G.G. Jackson's got to be, you know, right there with the Clarks and Aldamas and Kennards in terms of guys that are going to get the big minutes off the bench.
Eric, we appreciate it, man. Good luck tonight.
All right, guys. Talk to you next week.
That is Eric Hasseltine, Memphis Grizzlies, hosting the Rockets tonight. It's a late one. It's on TNT. Pregame will start at 8 p.m. tonight here on 92.9 FM ESPN with tip-off with Eric at 8:30. Valentine's Day is coming up. And if you're thinking about getting something for that special someone in your life, you should go over to Robert Irwin Jewelers. Because if you shop now through Valentine's Day, You get a dozen fresh roses and a box of chocolates free with any purchase of $99 or more. You can pick them up with your voucher between February 11th and 14th. This is while supplies last. Couple of options you can think about at Robert Irwin Jewelers. You're thinking about getting engaged. Check out the Above Love Star Diamond Engagement Ring. It's an extraordinary diamond featuring 100 facets and a hidden star in the center for an unmatched spark.